the liberal media market directly towards these groups. And you know, they're very, very good at their messaging and telling these classes of people that, you know, they're a victim class in America, in opposition to a political party or a group of people that want to oppress them, that wish to do them harm, that wish to prevent them from being able to succeed. These are real things. And I don't believe that in 2019 they exist as they once did in the past. I mean, homophobia today is not what homophobia was in the 80s or the 90s, and racism today is not what it was in the 50s and the 60s and prior to that. But if you watch the liberal media, you would believe it was worse. And it's like, how dare they create such division and so much animosity and so much fear?
I'm proud to share with you Tetragen, which helps you transition to a healthier, happier, and thinner you without cravings or side effects. Our metabolic hormones are the underlying problem that doom every diet and exercise program to fail. They control our metabolism, cravings, how much we eat to feel satiated, blood sugar levels, and even our energy levels. Tetragen is formulated with four clinically proven patented ingredients to help rebalance your metabolic hormones in roughly 15 to 20 days, depending on the amount of weight you want to lose. Once your metabolic hormones are rebalanced, you'll be on the path to long-term, sustainable weight loss because Tetragen is the first in the world which is scientifically formulated with four clinically proven and patented active ingredients to help you reach your targeted weight in two distinct phases. Phase one, rebalance your metabolic hormones, and phase two, accelerate fat loss. The best part is that Tetragen comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. So what do you have to lose besides weight? Learn more with the link below.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have Brandon Strock. He is the founder of the Walkaway Movement coming onto the program, and we are going to have an amazing conversation about why he walked away. And I think it's pretty enlightening what he is talking about. I think there are millions of people across the country that feel as if, like he does, and maybe are afraid to talk about it. But we get into all sorts of topics on why he decided to walk away from the Democratic Party. And then we talk about where our country is going, and that, you know, it's pretty scary, and with all the censorship. And to me, it feels like the Bolshevik Revolution, but in our modern way. You know, history repeats itself, and we talk about that and how it's like our modern version of it. And where are we going from here? I mean, if they can censor pretty vanilla content, which it already feels like a step way too far, what is the next step? And so that's, we talk about some of those things. And then he sticks around for my Patreons and gives an amazing story of how he ran into this person. He had a MAGA hat on, and this model, if you will, who was, and how she behaved, and she got violent. And then he saw her again last night at a concert he went to, and then the what happened there. And then also the compassion that all of his followers showed towards her. And it's, he has a really great story on that. So that's for my Patreons. You can see it at the link below. But let's get into my great conversation now with Brandon Strock. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I've been wanting you to come on for a while. I know we had some scheduling problems. I was trying to get you on for Labor Day weekend, and I advertised it, and now hope. So I'm so glad that you're here now. You are an amazing person for people to meet. And
thank you.
Yeah. Well, you have started this walk away movement, and I've talked to other people who have walked away, and maybe not part of your formal movement, but did it on their own as well. But you started this whole movement, and there's so many people following you. And I'd like to talk a little bit, and you've probably answered this question a million times, but for people who haven't seen you, why did you start this movement?
Sure. Yeah, no, I am a former liberal and a former Democrat. And, you know, I was for a very long time, my entire adult voting life. And I was a liberal probably going back to, you know, my teen years when we start to get hormonal and angsty and start wanting to change the world, you know? So I kind of fell into, well, I didn't kind of fall. I did fall into, a very liberal camp. And that was a while ago. I mean, that was the 90s. And I think that, you know, the issues that affected us at that time are very different than what rights were, a big political wedge issue. And so it sort of makes sense in a way why I fell into the camp that I fell into. But I think what happened over time was I wasn't really asking very many, critical questions or revisiting why I had an allegiance to the Democratic Party or this ideology of liberalism. And I think that that's true of a lot of people. I think if you're a minority class of person, whether it's a racial minority, an LGBT person, a woman, the Democrat Party and the liberal media market directly towards these groups. And, you know, they're very, very good at their messaging and telling these classes of people that, you know, they're a victim class in America in opposition to a political party or a group of people that want to oppress them, that wish to do them harm, that wish to prevent them from being able to succeed. And so, I mean, this message, you know, kind of carried through throughout my life and straight through into the 2016 election, in which I was a staunch Hillary Clinton supporter. And I voted for Hillary in 2016 and fully bought into the liberal media narrative of who Donald Trump is, or, you know, who they said he was and who his supporters were. And so I was really scared when Donald Trump got elected president, as a lot of people still are. But certainly at that time, people were very afraid because we didn't see it coming. The same media told us that he had, you know, a 3% or less chance of winning. And so after he got elected, I really wanted to understand it. I truly wanted to understand it, which I think was how I was able to ultimately walk away, because unlike the majority, I think, of other liberals who just want to scream and rant and, you know, scream at the sky and cry and freak out, I wanted to understand this because it something wasn't adding up for me. I thought, how could it be that the majority of people who voted twice for the Black president are now racist and now following, you know, the biggest racist and bigot and homophobe in the world when they voted for Obama twice? And I wasn't really seeing, it just wasn't making any sense. But the media kept saying, oh, no, this is the, you know, second coming of Hitler and we're living in 1930s Germany, you know, and all this crazy stuff. So I went on a quest to ask questions and understand. And ultimately in January of 2017, shortly after Trump took office, I asked the question, you know, I'll never understand how any of you people could vote for this man who stood before a cheering crowd and mocked a reporter's disability. I mean, what is wrong with you? And finally, somebody reached out to me, someone who's known me really my whole life, sent me a video privately on Facebook entitled "Debunking That Trump Mocked the Disabled Reporter." And I asked her, or she asked me, have you seen this? And, you know, at first I didn't even want to watch it. I was very sort of offended and angry that she would even send this to me. And I thought, you know, this is going to be more right-wing propaganda, brainwashing, you know, and I was prepared to be infuriated. But I decided to watch it anyway so that I could then get back to her and tell her how stupid she was for falling for it. And what I saw next was a compilation of footage of Donald Trump doing that same voice and that same gesture as he did that day when he mocked a reporter's disability. But he was, in every circumstance, he was imitating somebody who was caught in a lie or doing something shady or dishonest. And none of these other people were disabled. And it became very clear very quickly that he was not mocking that reporter's disability. He was making fun of the fact that that reporter, who just happened to be disabled, was caught in a lie.
Isn't that treating a more equal anyways? I mean,
Right.
I'm not going to treat you special because you're disabled. If you're lying, you're lying.
That's exactly right. And this is, you know, and that's a really good point that you just made, is that that was not only did it open my eyes to the reality that the media that I had trusted my whole life and who I thought actually cared about minority classes of people, gay people, Black people, they were actually using and manipulating us, by scaring us, by putting their own slant and spin on these stories. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not sitting here today saying that, you know, there's no such thing as biased media. I think that all media is biased. I absolutely do. But what I do not think is that the conservative media is specifically targeting and lying to minority classes of people. And that is like a whole nother monster. And when I discovered this, I was outraged. I was absolutely outraged because I thought to myself, you know, homophobia, racism, things like that, these are real things. And I don't believe that in 2019 they exist as they once did in the past. I mean, homophobia today is not what homophobia was in the 80s or the 90s, and racism today is not what it was in the 50s and the 60s and prior to that. But if you watch the liberal media, you would believe it was worse. And it's like, how dare they create such division and so much animosity and so much fear in this country amongst people when, in fact, things are actually going quite well. And we really didn't need to be terrified that Donald Trump was elected president. Long story short, actually too late, it's already a long story. But to answer your question, these are the things that started the catalyst for me waking up and then sent me on kind of a long journey of research, which ultimately resulted in me walking away from the Democratic Party. And I was so infuriated by what I discovered that I thought, you know, I'm going to start a campaign encouraging other people to wake up and other people to walk away from the Democratic Party as well, because I know that I am not alone in feeling disenfranchised by this party, which is also, you know, set aside everything I just said about the media and how dishonest they are. But this party has become so extreme. They've become their ideology has become so about victimhood and divisiveness, and it's unbearable. I mean, it's unbearable to not know, am I allowed to talk because I'm white? I think I can talk because I'm gay, but I'm white, so does that outrank my gay? Like, this whole privilege hierarchy nonsense that they subscribe to, and identity politics and political correctness and the extreme policies, it's too much. So I decided to walk away, and I decided to create basically a campaign network of support for other people to walk away. And it started as a social media movement for people to tell their testimonials, to tell, make their videos and tell their stories why they're walking away. And bada bing, bada boom, it exploded. And here we are today.
Well, have you learned a lot since you walked away? I mean, now that your eyes are opened, because I have a lot of the same journey. I always thought I was kind of middle of the road. A lot of people start when they're in college being a lefty, if you will. I don't believe in the left-right paradigm anymore, but I really thought, you know, because if you have any kind of compassion, how could you not be like that? And then you kind of start understanding you start understanding economics. You start understanding business. You start understanding the justice system. You start understanding how money works and all these other things. And the issues are a little more complex, and you become more of a grown up and understand the sense of responsibility. Mm-hmm, right. I mean, then you start digging in. So have you looked at things? I mean, have you seen things differently now that you walked away? I mean, have you even dug in more and saw even more?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the process never ends. I mean, it's going to take a very long time, I think, for me to sort of re-educate myself about things. I mean, there's still, like, every day, and there are still things where I'm like, oh, now I get what was going on there. I thought it was this, but it's actually this. I was actually just having a conversation shortly before this interview with one of my team members from Walkaway. And I went to see a concert last night here in New York. I went to see Madonna. And, you know, Madonna always likes to mix politics with her performance, and which is fine. Everyone's entitled to their opinions and stuff. But, you know, she took a break during the show to kind of give a monologue talking about why people should be allowed to have abortions, and that why she's pro, you know, why she supports this. And, you know, and it was the same rhetoric about Republicans trying to control women's bodies. Now, you honestly, it doesn't even require taking a stance pro or anti-abortion. What I've come to realize is how upsetting and typical, I now realize it is, the way that the argument is framed. Because I always was pro-abortion as a liberal because I was told time and again that Republicans are trying to control women's bodies, that straight white men wish to control women, and that's, you know, the nature of the patriarchy that we live in. And this is something that I bought into entirely. It wasn't until becoming a conservative and sort of listening and opening my mind to the arguments on both sides that I realized there is nobody in this country that's trying to control women. That is not what it's about. Again, we can all have differing opinions about abortion, but let's at least have the argument honestly and fairly and understand that the people who are staunchly anti-abortion believe that life begins at conception, and they want to save the life of a human being, what they consider to be a human being. And that's what the argument should be, but it's so disingenuous. And so to answer your question, yes, I mean, it's an ongoing process. I'm constantly learning, but I'm really learning about the very dishonest ways in which the left's arguments are often framed, and how it always comes from a place of trying to stoke emotion in this constituency, revolving around social injustice or some type of injustice, when in fact that's rarely what it really truly is about. And in fact, it could be argued that there are equally compassionate reasons for which conservatives feel the way that they feel, and that conservative policies are often also stemmed in compassion. But it's an uphill battle because the liberals really have control of the narrative, you know, through the media, and it, you know, their everything that they stand for is the narrative surrounding it is that they are the compassionate, empathetic, emotionally involved, sensitive class of people, and that conservatives are greedy, selfish, unfeeling, uncaring, unempathetic. And it's unfortunate because I think that conservatives have been kind of beaten down and not they've become fearful about defending their positions because no one wants to be called a racist or a bigot or whatever. But that's how we've gotten to this point.
Well, I remember going to visit the Susan B. Anthony Museum, and, you know, I'm a female. I'm really pro rights and all this stuff. This is when I was younger. And they talked about the great Republican Party and how the Republican Party brought them their rights. And I'm like, really? Because I was young. I didn't know. I was so brainwashed that I thought it was the Democrat Party that brought the rights. You know what I mean? Because I just was, it just didn't. And they're like, no, they were almost shocked and like offended. It was the great Republican Party, I remember her saying to me. And that I still remember that because this is the Susan B. Anthony Museum talking about the great Republican Party. And then they also talked about black rights and minority rights and all this other stuff. And there's just our history has been rewritten in a lot of ways, and realizing that there's different perspectives and different reasons. Yeah. And have you tracked like the social justice system or the court system, the justice system, prison system under the Clintons, and how it was not what we were sold? I mean, that was kind of one of my really big awakenings, is we have so many people in the prison system, and it really skyrocketed under the Clintons. And they were doing exactly opposite of what they were claiming they were going to do. And that's why I asked you, the more you look into this, are you seeing more and more stuff? Because this is an onion that you're going to start on, you know, get a red pill is not, it's almost like being red pilled on the first layer of the onion. And then you start really tearing in. And as you tear that onion, the tears become a little harder to keep back. So, you know.
It's true.
It is.
Yeah. No, definitely. I definitely am peeling that onion all the time, I think. Yes.
And what do you think about the socialism, the fact that they're pushing? I almost am starting to get scared because I'm seeing how much I'm being censored. And even my most vanilla shows are being censored. It scares the hell out of me because now I'm starting to think, oh, my God, you know, is this like some kind of takeover of our country or something? I mean, What do you think of this radical socialist agenda where they're taking away people's rights to even talk about certain things?
I think it's very scary. I think it's really scary. And I think it forces you to realize, like, really dig into and think about the naivete that I think that at least I had, you know, when social media became a thing that, you know, a common part of our culture, like, it never occurred to me in a million years that that Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all YouTube and all of these things that have become a common part of the way that we interact with one another, we communicate with one another, would be weaponized against a political class of people. I mean, that just didn't dawn on me. I think, you know, back when we were so excited to be able to reconnect with our high school classmates and share our family vacation photos and, you know, share jokes about work and stuff like that, it wasn't in my purview for sure that one day these tech giants, who are all extremist liberal progressives, would silence the other side and basically sort of create a culture in which there's one point of view, one opinion. I mean, now Facebook is even sort of engaging in this. They've gotten involved now where you'll sometimes receive a message if you share a certain news story or something where they say, you know, this is not a real news story. And then they direct you toward the links that they consider to be the real news story. So they're now deciding what the truth is. And that is going to become a part of, you know, the narrative that gets circulated. And especially going into an election in 2020, it's really horrifying to know that these, you know, we depend, like it or not, on these social media. So, I mean, they've become, a lot of people, it's their work, their livelihoods are revolve around social media. I mean, this is it's not just entertainment anymore. I mean, this is really a common part of our lives. And they're telling us that they know better than we do what the truth is, what words are acceptable to say, what words are not acceptable to say. And they have the power to make us disappear if we don't adhere to their rules.
Well, they've come to the point where you can't make money online unless you agree with their narrative and you follow their stances. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, there's 50 attorney generals across the country that are suing Google on for that reason, because they're keeping people from being able to make money unless they, you know, are like them or whatever arbitrary reasons that they shut people down. To me, it's very, very serious. I mean, it's about as serious as it gets. And I don't know if the average person is anywhere near as aware as they need to be on how serious of an issue this is. And in your experience, what does this lead to? I mean, what are we going to? I mean, what's going on that they are able to? What do you think? What are they doing? What do you think the big plan is? Or do you think they're just power hungry and not thinking?
I think it's both, in a way. I mean, I think that there are definitely people who, this is a question that I have asked since the beginning when my eyes were kind of open, is what is the ultimate goal here? I mean, when we talk about like Hillary Clinton running for president or a lot of these now Democrat candidates who are running under a very socialist platform, what is the end goal? Like, what do they actually want? And I think that for some people, myself included, previously as a liberal, I think that there are the thoughtless people who think that this is compassionate, who don't stop to think that America is not, impervious. That I think that there's a lot of belief that America is invulnerable, that we can never... You can never take America down. We can never falter. We can never fail. So why shouldn't we all open our pocketbooks and open our borders and save anyone in the world who needs to be saved, and that we have more than enough and we'll always have more than enough? There's certainly that group of people, which I would say I fell into. And then there are the people who certainly know better, but are kind of leading the charge. And these are these sort of globalist entity, you know, these globalist leaders who I don't know. I mean, all I can imagine is that they know that their political beliefs will lead us to a place in which there will be two classes of people, and an incredibly wealthy elite group of people, and the rest of us on the ground who are the serfs, you know. And I think, I mean, one can only imagine that perhaps that's the way they want things to be. I mean, because it's inevitable that is what will happen. And so, I have to believe that at the end of the day, it's about power and control. And then the use of the social issues is, I think, their way of trying to stamp out a whole huge group of people in America, almost the entirety of middle America and a number of people on both coasts, you know, to basically say your voice no longer matters. Let's face it. They believe that straight white men in this country have ruled long enough, and it's time for them to be dethroned in some way. And so that's what all this social justice push is about. They're trying to, I think, somehow equalize, that's in quotation marks, equalize people in this country. And they're not putting much thought into why is there inequity to begin with? I mean, maybe statistics on paper and say, well, you know, statistically, black people are making less money than white people. So surely that's because of racism. But they don't really dig deeper to ask questions about, well, what are the percentages of people within these groups that are graduating from high school? What are the percentages that are then going on to college? What are the percentages that are ending up in prison? And there are very different variables and factors that go into why people's lives turn out the way that but they don't care about any of that. They just want to push the narrative, racism, sexism, homophobia, and they want to just absolutely equalize everything. But it's totally disingenuous and disastrous.
Well, and how do you think the black folks in our country have been betrayed? Because it's almost like they are afraid to move over to another camp and say, hey, I'm a conservative. I believe in Trump. It seems, though, that it's almost like they're being forced into, you know, I've heard the word, they're forced on the plantation. I don't know if it's a word I can use as a white chick. It's a white woman. Can I say that? But it's like they're forced. I can't say that. I'm sorry, everybody. I said the wrong words. But they're being forced on that. They've said that. And so I'm repeating what they have said. It's like they're being forced into this group. And if they leave it, how dare them? They can't have freedom of thought and freedom of anything. They have to be here. Otherwise, you're betraying our whole group. I mean, how ridiculous is that?
Right. Well, I mean, what you're describing is a social stigma that transcends just, you know, the margins of the Democrats and the liberals and the media. I mean, this is we do a lot of work in the Walkaway campaign trying to communicate with, address, and connect with minority groups in this country, including the black community. We actually just got back from Atlanta yesterday or the day before from doing our third Walkaway Black Americans Town Hall. We're going to continue to do these events around the country and for as many groups as we can, as we can afford to do this for. I mean, we have events, we've done LGBT events. We will be doing Hispanic American town halls, Jewish American town halls. We have a really cool event that we're planning for. For American women in general, to just sort of open up these conversations and have this dialogue. But the thing I think to bear in mind is, yes, it is the Democrats who are marketing themselves towards this group and the liberal media, and they are absolutely telling Black Americans that it's only the Democrats that care about them and that the Republicans don't care about them and don't want them. However, it's so much deeper than that, because this type of thinking has gotten so entrenched and generationally that many black people feel that they cannot walk away because other black people will turn on them. And there's pressure, I think, all around. So, I mean, it's a lot of work that we have to do, because we're not just fighting the liberal media and the Democrat Party. We're fighting social stigmas that have existed for generations. And we have to a kind of create a space in which people can say, to hell with it. I'm allowed to think any way I want to think. I mean, isn't this what freedom is? Like, isn't this, I mean, we have abolished slavery and now people are still sort of mentally enslaved. And so we have to break those chains as well, because people, what's the point of being free if you don't have a choice? I mean, what is the point of being free if you still have to do something that maybe you don't want to do, because otherwise you'll be ostracized? That's a problem. And so we have to sort of address those stigmas too and fight through them. And that's what we're trying to do. And, you know, I, the work that I'm doing in Walkaway is made even harder still by the fact that I don't see many people doing what we're doing. I mean, even with the success of Walkaway, even with the way that, you know, a lot of non-liberals, because Walkaway is not a Republican organization, we're a non-Democrat. You know, we're an anti-Democrat movement. And so we have libertarians, independents, Republicans. We have Trump supporters and we have people who don't support Trump. And all of that's fine because we don't tell people how to think or what to do. But I think with the exception of Huawei, I don't see that much action in the conservative movement trying to communicate with minority groups and say, hey, we want you guys over here. We want you to step out of the groupthink, the tribal mentality, the identity politics, and embrace your individualism and your Americanism. Exactly. And come be a part of the American dream that's still alive and well on the right. Besides Walkaway, I don't see a lot of that happening. So it's an added challenge for me to go out and try to, you know, and I'm just a gay white boy running around the country trying to tell Black people and Hispanic people to leave the Democratic Party. You know, and
that's kind of fun.
Luckily, I think that people sense my my genuine appeal. Yeah, and that I'm very authentic in my quest to get people to see the truth about the Democratic Party. And I think that people see that, but I'm just one person. So, I mean, it would be amazing, I think, if the RNC would take a look at what I'm doing and the way that it's appealing to people and say, hey, let's get behind this Walkaway thing. Hey, let's do more. Let's also talk to these. And sadly, it's not happening nearly enough.
Well, because I don't believe in the left-right paradigm. I consider myself completely independent. And that's why. Because I get disappointed with both sides when I dig in. I like the freedom. I don't know what I am. I want things to not be messed up, and I want sincere people to have the freedom to do what's right for what they believe in. Going back to what we were all founded on. You know, it's funny. My husband's from Mexico and my kids are Hispanic, and me, they're both whatever they are, they're Hispanic plus me. But they look, my daughter, especially, she looks Hispanic. And so she, she looks both. I don't know. But she's obviously something. They don't know what they are. But she's in a class, you know, at college. And these people are a lot of white people that are telling her what it's like to be Hispanic. Very liberal, right? And they know what it's like to be her, more than her. And that bugs the crap out of her, you know? And she's like, Mom, I got to get a good grade though. So I got to, you know, do what I got to do. But that's the kind of stuff that is asinine. I mean, people need to step out and say, this is it. Let's take control of our situations. Let's take control of our communities. We don't want people who are minorities in our own communities, whether they're like us or not like us, who commit crimes either. I don't want that. I want my whole community cleaned up. I want good people around. I want our children to have a good future. I want the same thing as everybody else wants. And why can't we get that through our heads? Yeah, we have different cultures. That's fine. That's great. But down deep, everybody kind of wants this. They want an opportunity for their children. They want to be able to have a great family life. They want to be able to worship what they worship. Freedom to worship whatever they worship. It's what our country was founded on. And that's why it's scary, because these steps are almost like what they did in the Soviet Union when the Bolshevik revolution, except it's not, doesn't have that there was war at that same time, so it was so much easier for them to be violent at that same time, because the officers could turn and then go against the Russian czars and the Russian aristocracy. So we don't have that going on, but we sure do when it comes to the media and to the big tech companies. I mean, it is very much an info war, using Alex Jones's language, which I don't know, I have to steal that from him, because he's right on that. It is an information war. And it's scary. To me, it's scary. It seems like almost a Bolshevik revolution, except it's in our modern day twist on it.
Yes, agreed. And so this is a conversation that I've had many, many times with people. We grow up hearing, well, history will repeat itself. History will repeat itself. But I think that what we didn't learn, or weren't really told to consider, is that when history repeats itself, it's not going to be a literal repeat of the first situation. Evil will shift forms. It's cunning. It's baffling. You don't see it come. Evil people don't think that they're evil. If you went back to World War II Nazi Germany, I don't think that Hitler and the Nazis would have said, oh yes, we're evil. They thought that what they were doing was noble and good. And so, people talk about, oh, Donald Trump is the second Hitler. And oh, we're like, if and when something as dark, and God forbid, but if and when something as dark as what happened in World War II were to happen again, it would not literally be a second coming of Hitler and the Nazis and whatever. It's going to come in a cunning form that we didn't see coming until it was too late, just as what happened back then. And so this is what I think is so dark and sort of insidious about what we're seeing today, because the way that evil is manifesting itself today is in the guise of goodness. It's coming in this form of social justice, liberating disenfranchised people, doing humanitarian acts and humanitarianism. That's what it's masquerading as now. But it's a total lie, because who would possibly in their right mind reject humanitarianism, being a good person, being empathetic? But that's what makes it so cunning, and that's what makes it so devious, is that it's a lie. It's a Trojan horse. And so that, if we allow these people, these, progressives who claim that, everything that they're doing is in the quest of trying to better humanity and these humanitarian principles, we're going to end up in a very dark place, in a very dark situation. And people are going to go, how did this happen? How did this happen? Well, it happened because history did repeat itself, but it did it in a way that wasn't just paint by numbers and what you expected it to be.
And it can get really scary, can it? I mean, when it starts, this snowball effect of a small amount of people having a lot of control, like they do with the tech companies censoring people, it almost always turns into something really bad. And that's why I'm scared, because I'm seeing a pattern of, even though it's hiding, like you said, behind this goodness stuff, I'm watching vanilla, just really basic free speech being shut down. And I'm like, well, you're not shutting down just hate speech like you claim. You're shutting down basic ideas. So that's an example of, now they've taken a step way too far, shutting down just basic people having conversations and debate that we should have. And they're, what's the next step, and
certainly. Right.
And that's why it's scary.
Well,
because,
I mean, there's,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. You can be, banned now on Twitter and Facebook for using terms like illegal alien, or, so it's, if you can't even, if that's now considered hate speech to address, and that's a legal term, by the way. I mean, it's not something that somebody cooked up to try to hurt somebody's feelings. I mean, it's a real, actual legal term, but we're not allowed to use that legal term anymore because it's not in alignment with the politics of the big tech giants. And, you know, there, if you go on Twitter, you can see everywhere. I mean, there's white people are terrible. White people suck. White people are the problem with everything that's wrong in the world. White people, you know, like that. Anybody has carte blanche to say anything that they want about white people. But, and actual experiments have been done on this where people have taken the same tweet and changed the word white for black and gotten banned.
Yes.
So the concept is there. It's just that there's a double standard. And the double standard directly applies to the politics of the big tech giants, which want you to believe white people are terrible. White people are the cause of every problem in this country. That to acknowledge that there is such a thing as illegal immigration is hateful. And that if you talk about it, you will be banned. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's Orwellian stuff. And it's very dangerous.
Well, and Facebook banned a post that had just the Constitution in it because it had some writing, you know, from back then. They weren't as politically correct as today. And there was some writing in the Constitution, I don't remember the exact phrase, but it was offensive to, you know, minority groups, and they banned it. And then they had to sheepishly put it back up. But that's where we're going to, and we could go there pretty quickly. Now, where are you at with this walkaway movement? What are you trying to do next? What, you know, how can people help you, and where are you taking this?
So what we have coming up between now and 2020, which is really kind of where our eyes are laser focused right now, Walkaway is actually a 501c3 organization. We're now a nonprofit organization, and we're also a super PAC. So the Walkaway super PAC was just formed, and we'll be officially announcing that very soon. But through these two organizations, we're going to engage in a number of activities to try to change the political landscape between now and 2020 and beyond. We're doing this in the form of our town hall events, which are geared toward either minority groups in this country or issue-based. Very soon, we're going to be doing our first capitalism versus socialism town hall at Berklee College. We're going to be doing a Second Amendment town hall. Of course, I already said the Black Americans, the LGBT, the Hispanic, the Jewish, and actually we're talking to people now about doing some Asian outreach as well. So basically communicating with these various minority groups that aren't really being talked to much by the Republican Party, but are definitely being marketed to by the Democrats, and trying to get people to rethink the way that they think, break some of those cycles of generational voting and allegiance to this party. And then also we're going to on a college campus tour, tons of college campuses we're getting in, and we're going to spread this sort of Walkaway message in colleges across the nation. We've created an educational video series called The Hard Truth. Each video is about 5 minutes long with a different speaker speaking on a different topic, covering subjects such as liberal media bias, socialism, racism and slavery, the First Amendment, anti-Semitism, all of these different things. You know, once again, like I was saying earlier, the arguments have been framed in a certain way by liberals. And so we're kind of trying to reframe the argument in a way that I think is more neutral and fair and gets people to rethink how they actually feel about these various issues. And you know, we're just going to keep talking and spreading and doing our boots on the ground activism as well, voter registration. You know, we're really, really dedicated to making a big change between now and 2020. If people want to help us, I beseech that they do so, because we really truly are grassroots. This is not a movement that is supported by millionaires and billionaires. We don't have that luxury. But I will say we are the hardest working organization in the country. I have a volunteer team that never stops. We work 7 days a week. I don't get paid. No one gets paid. But the events and the initiatives that we do are very costly. So if people would go to walkawaycampaign.com and click donate, please help us out. I mean, your dollars are going to really good use, because we're actually connecting with these various groups. We're changing people's minds, and we work so, so hard at what we do. So this is money well spent in supporting us. And if you'd like to volunteer, go to walkawaycampaign.com and click how to get involved. And there's information there about how you can volunteer, get involved with what we're doing. It's such a worthwhile cause. It's so important. And I really believe that Walkaway is one of the most important pieces on the chessboard that's going to make a difference in the 2020 election. So please help us out financially. Help us by donating. And what else do I need to say? Oh, join us on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. Subscribe, follow at Real Walkaway. And people can find me at Brandon Strock. And my last name is spelled S-T-R-A-K-A. Yes, it's very confusing with that silent A at the end.
Okay, all right. You had your act together. Will you stick around for my Patreons?
Of course.